We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yeah, hit the wrong button. It happens.
Good morning, and welcome to the morning briefing for Tuesday, October 31st, 2017.
That's right.
It's the Halloween edition of the show. I'm your host, Eric the Demon Dame. Jake the Horrifying Hughes is your producer. And coming up on today's show, a man who spends time in one of the scariest, most evil places on earth will join us live in studio to regale us with terrifying tales from Capitol Hill. He is Justin Brown, the founder and CEO of Hillvets, and every Tuesday, he's in here letting us know what's happening on that place full of goblins and ghouls. Every day, not just today. Now, I can't think of anything much more frightening than legal troubles. Whether you're facing time behind bars or financial ruin, it's some scary stuff. Luckily, there are groups like the Veterans Consortium out there to help vets with those issues. And Samantha Stiltner from that very organization will be in studio with us today, talking all about what the Veterans Consortium does for, well, veterans. All of that on today's show and more, and it kicks off now as we welcome Jake to the studio. Jake, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I had to drive my wife's car to work because there's a Halloween parade at my son's school, and with my mother in town. My wife's car is just a mess, basically. She hasn't driven it that much. She drives it like early in the morning. There's like coffee mugs everywhere. She said, "Can I take your car? Can you just take mine to work?" I hate driving her car. Hate it. And the reason, it's not because it's a bad car. It's an Audi. It has pickup. It moves a lot better than mine. It's a lot more responsive and all that stuff. Here's the problem. It's made for little people. When I say little people, I mean like little people, big world, that kind of little person, like dwarves, because I can barely fit in it, and I'm not huge. I'm like 5'10", 5'11", something like that, and I can barely fit into this stupid car. So every time that she asks me to drive, if she can use my car, I like grudgingly say yes. This is the last time. This is the last time.
But I'm willing to bet you said that last time, too.
No, I didn't. This time, I was just like, when I'm coming in here, when I have to drive almost an hour each way, and she wants to use my car to go 5 minutes each way because my car is cleaner, I guess, at the moment. Clean out your car, then. Don't make my commute miserable. And I missed a turn because you would think I would know exactly where to turn everywhere on the way in on my route, but I have a phone holder that keeps my phone at eye level, so I see the map on the GPS and it takes me different ways. I wasn't thinking about it and I missed the turn, so I ended up getting here like 15 minutes later than I normally do. The whole thing, it's just no, I can't listen to audio from my phone. I can't stream the connectingvets.com stream or any of our podcasts or any of that like I often do on the way into work, because she doesn't have Bluetooth in the car. It's like, oh, come on. I think it's time for her to get a new car.
Yeah,
that's
probably.
What I think. And you know what? Those Audis, they got a pretty good resale value. So here's my idea. Sell it. All the money that she makes from it, just put it into like an average car that's maybe not as nice as an Audi. Although, I don't think that car is all that nice anyway. So
Well.
That's just my point of view on it. But as we mentioned a moment ago, today is Halloween. That's why she needs my car to go to a Halloween parade at my son's school. So, Jake, have you decided, if you're going to wear a costume for Halloween, it is Halloween, so you kind of have to have decided if you're going to. If so, what is it?
I have decided, and I decided I'm not going to because I don't really have anywhere to go dressed up, you know? And I don't think my apartment's, I don't think they do trick-or-treating inside my apartment. So,
they don't.
You know, so yeah. I really don't have anywhere to go, anything to do. It's just going to be me and my dog watching horror movies tonight.
Well, there you go. I'm going to be, I think I'm going to be going out trick-or-treating with my son. But here's the thing. Someone has to man the door while we go out. Otherwise, there won't be any candy. So I'll probably end up staying home as my mother and my wife go out with my son, who is going to be a dragon, specifically Drogon from Game of Thrones, and my wife will be Khaleesi, the mother of dragons. So there you go. You get it. And then I think my mother's going to be Barney Rubble from the Flintstones or something like that.
Oh, that's out of nowhere.
Yeah, she's got the same haircut he does, basically. So she's going to do that one. But she is, I've mentioned before, my mother is a curler, you know, curling the
yes,
sport. With the
you've
sweep.
Mentioned that before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she is, you know, involved with it on the national and the worldwide scale. She was at a tournament in Wisconsin prior to coming down this weekend and visiting us. And it was the Halloween tournament where there's a costume contest and her team were the Flintstones. So I think that's why that particular choice in costume. I don't think it was just because, like, I want to be Barney Rubble. It was part of a group thing that went on that now is an individual thing. But I'm looking forward to Halloween. I mean, is it my favorite holiday? No, I wouldn't say it's my favorite. I would say Thanksgiving is my favorite. Sitting around eating. That's all that holiday's about. Yes, please. And it's right around my birthday. Sometimes on my birthday. So that's
really
good, too. Yeah.
How November. Is it sometimes on your birthday?
Well, it's on. Remember.
That's right. It's the last Thursday.
Thursday. And my birthday is the 29th. So if November the 29th, it's like rarely. It's like once every 7 years it's on It's on Thanksgiving or something like that. Maybe even more than that. Maybe it's once every 14 years because, well, I don't know. I know that occasionally my birthday is the same day as Thanksgiving. But yeah, just sitting around eating turkey and things like that. That's great. The candy thing, I'm not over candy. I enjoy candy every once in a while. I don't like saying the word candy, so it's really bothering me that I just said it three times in the last one sentence. It's one of those words I don't like. I don't like the sound of it.
Candy.
I can't remember the last time I've had candy because I've been trying to lose weight a little bit. So yeah. I can't remember the last time I actually sat down and had a candy bar.
Yeah, I can. It was probably yesterday. And that's it's not something that I do every day, but on my way home, you know, we have the little I don't know what you call it, the kitchen here where they have some more and more places do instead of vending machines. It's got like a little mini mart set up where you can pick out things, scan them, pay for them. And I got a Snickers bar yesterday along with my typical seltzer water for the way home. But yeah, it's other than that, no, I don't have a lot of it, and it's like, my teeth. The older you get, the closer you are to losing your teeth, so
yeah.
I want to take better care of them.
I drank enough soda as a kid. My teeth are more machine than man at this point.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, although I never had any.
Now, excuse me while I take a sip of my soda.
Yeah, I never had. Well, you're drinking like one of these morning beverages, and they morning just because they tell you it is. Like, yeah, this is good for the mornings.
Yeah.
It's got more caffeine than coffee does, that's for sure. Also probably
and I already had a cup of coffee, too, so
there you go.
I'm saving up for the day.
Yeah, so today, a big day for the holiday, of course, and then a big day for us here at Connecting Vets.
Oh, gosh.
I've never taken part in one of these things, Jake, and when I mentioned it to my wife last night, I hadn't mentioned it to her before, she looked at me and said, why? Why are you guys doing that? It's this November, no shave November thing.
Yeah.
Where considering that we have a good portion of us here have facial hair, you have a full beard, I have a full beard, Matt Sainting has a full beard, Phil Briggs has he's got this weird infection that's just confined to his chin area, and I don't know why. It's like this weird white raspy thing that really he should get checked out. But everybody here is basically going to be shaving off all their facial hair and then growing it back over November, and we'll be keeping track of that. We'll be doing like time-lapse photos. That's what they are calling it, and it kind of is. It's just a photo a day, basically, to show the growth. Where do you think yours will be at the end of a month?
Not
31-day month.
Not very long. But it takes a while for me to grow a full beard, so it might start out a little patchy.
Yours is pretty long right now. I think you may have the longest one here, actually.
Yeah, well, this has been growing for a good, like, 6-7 months.
And you've decided to see what I do. I usually shape it up. I keep the sides of the beard trimmed down a little bit. Yours, you've got like the lion's mane going. It's almost the same length under your ears as it is under your chin.
Yeah, I'm going full mountain man.
Yeah, yeah, really. Like you should be. What was that Clint Eastwood movie where he's out in the? Was it the Outlaw Josie Wales? He was in some other movie where he's living out off the
Grizzly
land.
Adams. That
yeah,
whole
that
bit,
that
yeah.
whole kind of thing. Yeah, so that's going on today.
There's golden in their hills.
We're gonna get rid of our beards, which I don't know how I feel about that. I've shaved my beard off since I got out once for my wife's birthday, and it would have been Oh, geez. I think it was my son would have been 1.5 at the time. So we're talking like 3 years ago. Again, I don't just let it grow and grow. I'm not one of those guys, but I trim up the sides and everything. But it's one of those things where, you know, you just like me, you were in for 13 years. I was in for 13 years. And for 13 years, I had to shave each and every weekday, at least. And
yeah,
typically on the weekend, let a little stubble grow out or whatever. But, you know, it was one of those things where I had to do it that way for so long, never got to grow a beard, that when I got out, it was like that was one of the first things I wanted to do. There was a bucket list of things I wanted to do when I got out of the military. One of them was grow a beard, and I grew it, and I liked how it looked. And my wife didn't seem to mind it either. At the time, my girlfriend and then fiance, she thought it was okay. She did say, I'd like to see your face more often. And then when I shaved it off, she was like, hey, you can keep the beard. So that whole thing. And that, I mean, there were other ones. There was like, when I got out, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to have to do urinalysis anymore. I'm going to do the marijuanas. Never did. Never did.
me neither. My one thing was, I want long hair, because I started listening to heavy metal music when I was about 12 years old, and I've wanted long hair since then, yeah. But I could never cut because my mom refused to let me grow it out as a kid, and then in the Army, I had to keep it high and tight. So when I got out, I said, dadgummit, I'm going to have long hair, and I have it now, and I'm very happy with it. But I honestly haven't been baby-faced since I got out of the Army, which was a year ago, 7 days ago.
Oh, wow. So you're just past your 1 year anniversary. But yeah, I've got the interesting outlook on you know, I've gotten rid of it once and I was like, yeah, now I'm gonna grow it right back, and that's what I'm gonna do this time. And to be a team player, to join in on it, and you know, do I really wanna do it? Not particularly. Am I going to do it? Yeah. Explain to me, because again, I've spent a lot of time overseas and I don't pay attention to a lot of things. What is the not shaving in November thing? Does it come from?
The official thing is we call Movember, which means growing a mustache. But the whole idea...
No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. The whole idea is to raise awareness for prostate cancer. Because we have all these different months and stuff for breast cancer. This is the one for guys for prostate cancer.
Raise awareness, though. That's an interesting thing when you hear people say that, because who doesn't know about prostate cancer? Like, who's not aware of it? You know what I mean?
Well, I think people don't realize that it's like, it's literally right behind breast cancer as far as prevalence in men.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we don't get breast cancer. Well, we don't get breast cancer as often.
Yeah, no, but we can.
Yeah, yeah. But like for the way breast cancer is for women, prostate cancer is basically for guys. Yeah. So it's to sort of raise awareness that this is a problem. We need more research. We need more funding into it.
Yeah. And you know what, when I say, you know, like, well, you know, who's not aware of it, but then you do have to take into account that a lot of people don't seem to have any situational awareness when it comes to what the real threats, like what's most likely to kill you out there. We talk about gun violence. We've talked about that on the show after the Las Vegas shootings. You are more likely, like many, many times more likely to die in a car accident because someone's a poor driver than you are to be shot.
Right.
Or killed by a guy. I mean, just to be shot, you're much more likely to be in a fatal car accident. More people die in car accidents than are shot in total every year, and vastly more people die in car accidents than are killed by gunfire every year. And when you take suicide out of that equation, it's even greater. But you don't see people out there, you know, railing for stronger controls on driver's licenses. And people just don't seem to focus on what is an actual threat versus what is a perceived threat. Well, this was on the news last night. That must be a bigger problem. No, it's that lunatic like the guy in the pickup truck with Georgia license plates who cut me off this morning twice. Or, he did it twice.
Yeah, or smoking kills more people than gun violence.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I quit. And I'm proud of you. You said it's, what, been 4 days since you've had a cigarette? Yeah,
4 days, something like that.
I'm proud of you, even though you might not keep to it, but
my
that's okay.
My mother-in-law got in on Friday, and I think it's been since then. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Friday night. So yeah, like 4.5 days or something like that. Yeah, I haven't yet had one, but you know, as I was driving in today, I was like, boy, that might be kind of nice. Now we are talking to him. We'll see. It's possible that they might be in on Friday or something like that. The Truth Campaign.
Really?
You know who they are?
Oh yeah, well, I used to really dislike them when I was a little kid. I used to call them the smoke Nazis.
Yeah, they weren't around, I don't think, when I'm a little bit older than you. I mean, when I was like joining the Navy. I'd have to look up exactly when they came into existence, but they're the ones who make all those commercials. And you know what I didn't like about the Truth campaign?
Yeah, I think it might be the same thing I don't like about them. Go ahead.
How hip and cool they tried to be with their commercials. Where they were like, hey, look at me. I like rap music and hip-hop dancing.
Well, that's one thing. My big thing is that their big campaign isn't to spread awareness of how bad it is for you. It's to blame tobacco companies. That was their, when I was a kid anyway, that was their big push. Was like, look how evil these giant corporations are. They're all corporation-y and evil. And it's like, why don't you just tell us that the cigarettes are going to kill us?
Yeah. Well, and that's what it's supposed to do. So it was launched in 99. Yeah, so I would have been 20 years old when it was launched. But, you know, here's the thing. While I can't say I've always agreed with the tone of all of their ads, their end goal is certainly a good one.
Oh, yeah.
And they currently have a big veteran push right now. Have you seen the commercials? They have ones with a former Navy SEAL on it talking about smoking and why it was pushed on veterans and all this other stuff. And I mean, it's absolutely true that it was. And you can go back to World War One, World War II, when they were given to soldiers by the government. Like, here's your MRE, and coming inside of it is a pack of cigarettes. Would you like some Lucky Strikes? Well, you're going to get them, soldier.
Well, hell, back then they used to prescribe that to pregnant women because it helped relieve stress.
Helped relieve stress. Calms the nerves in a pregnant lady to have a cigarette. Yes, it does. Everything works out fine. Hey, a good soldier needs a pack of cigarettes a day to help keep the shakes away. Go out and fight old Hitler and Tojo and get rid of them with the power of Lucky Strikes compelling you. That's such a bizarre time in history, but it's true. I mean, that was part of what you would be given as an active duty member of the military during World War II. You would get cigarettes in your... It would come with like an cigarettes. MRE type of thing. Yeah, your rations and everything. And they'd have cigarettes and they'd do all that stuff. And it was, it's crazy to think about, but again, a different era. They didn't really know back then. 50s and 60s is when they started figuring that out. If you've ever seen the show Mad Men, it's one of the big themes in the show is how they started figuring out, the government figuring out, hey, cigarettes are really bad for you. Yeah. And the advertising companies having new laws and restrictions put on them. And so... Definitely an interesting shift in dynamics where smoking was openly encouraged. Even when I came in, I mean, smoking was like, it was great to smoke on a ship because that got you breaks.
Exactly. That was, you know, the small trade-off of possibly dying a horrible death is to get away for 10 minutes every hour, get out of the motor pool and just kind of relax, get away from dumb privates or overbearing NCOs, just kind of exist for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed over the years. It changed in the 13 years I was in. I mean, when I got there, it was like, as long as you were outside, you were good to smoke. In some places on Navy ships back then, you could smoke inside. You still technically, I guess, can, although I think it's against the rules. But when the smoking lamp is lit, that means that the smoke deck is open. When it's not, the smoking deck smoking lamp is always lit in like the welding shop where the hull technicians do their welding because they have to weld. There's going to be smoke in there. So is it for smoking? No. But if you knew a hull tech, they could bring you in there and nobody would know if you were smoking in there. It was a social thing. That was really the biggest and best part of it, of being on a ship, going to the smoke deck in the middle of the night. You know, everybody's up. You're just working. You got to take a break. And you go down there and you'd hang out with people. You'd make friends down there. You'd talk and complain about everything that was going on that day. So it was really as much a social thing for me, I think.
Yeah, and it changed the 13 years I was in, too, because when I first went in, there was no... they didn't offer smoking cessation, but over the last couple of years I was in, they started pushing that really hard of you can get Chantix, you can get the patch, you can get pills.
Yeah. I remember there were options for that, but it was always optional. And then, there was what they tried to do. I remember on the Frank Cable. So the last ship I was on, I was only on it for a year and then left for Afghanistan from it. They moved the smoke deck from someplace that was like really close to the ship when you're in port to way like at the end of the parking lot. Like it was a long walk. here's where that backfired. That just meant a longer break for people.
Yeah.
Then they got 25 minutes where they weren't in the shop as opposed to 15 minutes where they weren't.
Just when you know who the dedicated smokers are. Like when I was stationed at Fort Riley and there would be like blizzards going on outside while we're doing sergeant's time training, they'd say, okay, if you want to smoke, go ahead, I guess. And there'd be like three or four of us out by the dumpster, literally shivering our butts off and still smoking because, you know, we're the dedicated group.
Well, Iceland, when I was there, we'd have to go outside into there was like a little cement bus in Iceland. It's so windy, putting up like a bus stop that you would think of on a normal base wouldn't work. They would be blown over. So it was these huge cement, like pillboxes almost that were had walls, and we'd go inside of there, and that was our smoke deck. And that was our smoking area on the ship. Let's see, on the Frank Cable, it was right outside of my office where the smoke deck was. And what they also would try to do, the command when you were out to sea would try to like just keep it shut down so that nobody could go smoke. Here's the problem. A lot of the senior enlisted folks, like your master chiefs and senior chiefs, a lot of them were smokers, and they were like, hey, no. You can do that after I retire. You're not doing that now. And so they would end up opening because there would be complaints like, hey, smoke deck's been closed for the whole time, man, all day. Why aren't they opening it? And then eventually the senior enlisted guys would be like, come on, man, let's go and get it opened back up. But truth, we're talking to them. They may be coming in here late this week, maybe on Friday, maybe next week. We're going to figure out exactly when that's going to happen. Hopefully today we'll know. We also have a really cool thing going on tomorrow.
You're kicking me out.
Yeah. Well, no, you're going to be part of this, and then I'm going to tell him that you said that you could beat him up, and we'll see what happens. So,
oh God,
we're going to be joined by a special guest in studio for the duration of tomorrow's show. Well, really the first and third segment, because the middle one is going to be pre-recorded. Shane Crutchton. Shane is a professional mixed martial arts fighter with the Pro Fighters League, formerly known as World Series of Fighting. He's he's based out in San Diego. He's a former Marine, Purple Heart recipient, an amazing story, you know, where he essentially became addicted to drugs and drinking and depression after he got out of the Corps, ballooned up to like 250 pounds, almost died, tried to overdose on cocaine on purpose, survived that. His Marine brothers came back and got him and brought him back to life, essentially. Now he fights professionally at 145 pounds, gives a section of his purse out to the Wounded Warrior Project and other charities. And because of his charitable acts, was actually the first person chosen by Harley Davidson for Mission Thank You to receive a brand new Harley Davidson motorcycle.
Yeah.
And then you know what he did with that bike after he got it, Jake?
Oh, what do you do with it?
He rode it from San Diego up to Sturgis to get some stuff up there, get some goodies, and then bring them back down to San Diego and give them out to veterans.
That's a heck of a drive.
Yeah, and you know what? He did it up and back in like three. He drove up there in one straight shot, was there for like 2.5 days, and then drove all the way back.
Wow.
To San Diego.
I couldn't do that. I would have to get like a special seat for my bike to be able to ride that long.
It's like a 12-hour ride. Well, no, he's got his is a touring bike, so it's built for longer rides. He's got the sound system in it and everything. We'll get to talk to him about that ride. And also, Mission Thank You through Harley Davidson, it ain't over, man. They're actually doing a giveaway this week, 2 days from now, Thursday, in the Washington, D.C. area. We're working with them trying to get Adam Sandoval and maybe the recipient of that bike in studio. We're going to have to see exactly when that would be because there might be a conflict with something we already have scheduled.
Right.
We will see what we can do with that, but we are definitely going to have them in. And then there's another bike that they're giving out on Veterans Day, which is going to be next Thursday. That one is going to be in New York City, so that's pretty cool, you know, that they're still doing that. And those bikes, of course, 8 of the brand new Harley Davidson Milwaukee 8 motorcycles given out to deserving veterans and active duty military who were submitted essentially by their friends, by their family, even by themselves. And look at me wearing a Harley Davidson t-shirt today. Yeah. I might have to.
And hey, because I don't think they're sponsoring us anymore, does that mean we could win now?
Well, they're not technically with us at the moment. I think they're going to come back in the
near
future.
To enter. No, no.
Yeah, no. They're we are not eligible for that. But those people who are out there, I'm not sure if you can still register, but hey, why not? Go ahead.
Yeah,
if you want to take a shot at it. So let's hope that we can get them on here. I'd love to have Adam Sandoval in studio, talk to him about the wonderful work he's done with Mission Thank You and overall. But Shane Crutchton, professional MMA fighter, Marine Corps veteran, Purple Heart Heart recipient. He is doing a mixed martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu clinic at Walter Reed, the Army Medical Center, where he is joined by Ray Sefo, who is basically the owner of Pro Fighters League, Kayla Harrison, the first ever woman to win gold in judo for the United States. So they're doing all that out there, and Shane is going to join us. I'm going to swing by his hotel and pick him up on the way in, and he's going to join us here in studio. And he said, hey, as long as you can get me back to the hotel by 10 o'clock, we're good to go. So after the show tomorrow, we may be able to shoot a little video of him demonstrating some of his techniques on you, Jake. How do you feel about that?
Hey, I'll do anything for a laugh. I mean, you know what? Maybe I'll go to Walter Reed for all those heroes over there and let them beat the crap out of me.
And you're not going to have a beard for him to grab onto anymore, so maybe that's
a benefit
for you. Think
that's my advantage. He'll slip off my smooth cheeks.
You think you could take him?
Hell no.
I was hoping you would say yes, and then I would record it and play it for him tomorrow. It's a morning briefing. Justin Brown of HillVets in studio after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Briefing, Halloween edition, October 31st, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is on the other side of the glass. More like Jake Booze. I guess that would kind of work for Halloween, but not work as well as it did inside of my head as it did when it came out of my mouth, but that's okay. Already a fantastic show here on this Tuesday edition of the Morning Briefing, and of course, a fantastic website powering it. CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com is connecting vets every day. Each and every member of our team is either themselves a veteran or very closely related to the veteran community. How close? How about married to a veteran? How about the child of a veteran? Yeah. Everybody on our team has that connection, has that understanding of what it's like to be part of the veteran community, and that's why we are working tirelessly every day of the week to keep putting out content that will inform, entertain, and benefit the veteran community. So be sure to visit the website. It's ConnectingVets.com. And then also be sure to follow us on social media. That's the best way to be kept abreast of all the wonderful things that we are doing for you. And you can do that by following us. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our next guest is an attorney, and she works with the Veterans Consortium, which is a pro bono organization providing legal services to veterans, specifically when it comes to appeals at the VA and other things like that. She is Samantha Stiltner. Samantha, good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It is absolutely our pleasure. Now, you, as I understand it, are not a veteran yourself, but do you have any ties to the veteran community now that you work with them so closely?
Well, I've always had ties with them. I've had family in wars since Korea. Ah. My brother just retired after 23 years.
Oh, wow.
And I grew up actually watching one of my uncles. He was a drafted Vietnam vet, and he worked to get his benefits, and after about 5 years started to give up. Had it not been for my aunt and our family having such a good support system, he would have never kept on fighting.
Mm.
And so seeing that and understanding that a lot of folks don't have this kind of support behind them, when I went to law school, knowing that I wanted to do something, I wanted to give back to the community and be in a nonprofit type of situation, I found out there is vets law. And that was really important to me. And so I got involved in my second year of law school. And that's all I've done since I actually started my career.
So you actually went into law with the goal of helping veterans? That was your specific career track?
Yes, I absolutely wanted to. And I was very fortunate to be involved in a veterans legal clinic at my law school, John Marshall in Chicago. And ever since then, I've worked in researching and I've started to do some publishing and getting out there. And so when I found the Veterans Consortium, it was a perfect fit because we do that legal advocacy and we do it completely for free. And so it's been really great to be in there and work on some new programs that I'm excited to tell you guys about today.
Now, your brother retired after 23 years from which branch of service?
He was Army.
Oh, man.
I know.
It's actually, not his fault, really. They probably tricked him in some
way. Hey, he was 82nd, airborne all the way.
Oh, that's. I think that's even worse. I'm not sure. I worked with the Army quite a bit. Jake worked with the Army for 13 years, being a member of them. But so you obviously had a lot of close ties that informed your career decisions. You went to school, you became a lawyer, and now you're part of the Veterans Consortium. So for those people who are unaware, I've actually talked to the executive director of the program on this very show before. Tell us a little bit about the Veterans Consortium, what it is, who it is, and what you guys do in general.
So the Veterans Consortium Pro Bono Program is a national nonprofit that provides free legal services to veterans and their families and their caregivers and survivors. We, like I said, we're national, so we can take a veteran that's anywhere in the country. And in fact, we have a couple expats because a lot of the work we do, we can do it over the phone or over email. So I think the last veteran we had right now is in Ireland.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty cool. We also train attorneys who specialize in representing veterans before the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. So if a veteran has gotten a board decision and they want to appeal that, they can come to us. And we have 2,500 volunteer attorneys throughout the country who can help them completely for free. Not to knock private attorneys, but some private attorneys take 20% off of an award that a veteran may get. Our attorneys absolutely do not do that. We also just started a discharge upgrade program. So veterans with PTSD or TBI issues, they can come to us and we can work with them to get their discharge upgraded.
And we've had, issues with that, the bad paper discharge, they
Absolutely,
call it. And those are the people who have, an other than honorable, essentially. Not a bad conduct discharge. That's a whole nother ball of wax, basically. Bad conduct discharge, essentially, is criminal activity led to you being kicked out. Other than honorable, we've talked to Chris Goldsmith, who works with Vietnam Veterans of America, mm-hmm. High Grounds Veteran Advocacy, who was dealing with PTSD and some pretty serious issues, attempted to commit suicide while he was recovering. His unit deployed. They used that as the onus to kick him out, essentially saying, well, you missed your deployment while he was recovering from attempting to commit suicide, given another honorable discharge, which limits a lot of veterans out there. Now, in Chris's case, he's been able to find his way to an Ivy League school and done some amazing things for himself, but he's fighting for those who maybe haven't had the ability to do that and things like that. So that is a big deal, and there's a lot of programs that we're going to talk about with the Veterans Consortium and what you guys do, and that's going to be one of them, definitely. But first, what are the biggest issues, the most common issue that veterans who come to the Veterans Consortium seem to be facing? What is the number one thing?
A lot of it is they've been facing going it alone for so long, and they filed their own initial claim, and then they got to the board, and the board gave them either denied them or gave them an unfavorable decision. And so now they're looking down the barrel of facing a judge and working with a court system that they don't understand. And they need people. Hmm. They need advocates. They need trained attorneys that can help them and lead them through this, that know what they're doing. And that's where we come in, because we are those advocates. I'm a staff attorney and also a program manager, so I have my own cases as well.
Right.
And so we're those advocates, and we recognize the need. Our court's been around since 1988, so we're still relatively new. But it became very apparent after the court was founded that we needed these advocates. And so we actually, Congress came through and said, we can't keep having veterans come and try to help themselves when we're sure we can find other folks out there that can do it.
And that's the thing when it comes to the law and the legal system. I'd like to think that if I were ever accused of something, I could defend myself, as we've seen happen. If you do that, you're probably going to end up on the losing end of things.
Right. And it's not even your fault. It's just you haven't been trained in this, and you haven't had the time in law school and things along those lines. So we have so many attorneys out there that are actually, there might be big law attorneys or solo practitioners, and they come to us and they say, I want to help a veteran. I have this training. What can I do? Mm. So we give them the veterans law training. We mentor them throughout the case, particularly if they're a new attorney. And then we get them started on a way that they can help veterans in their spare time with their particular knowledge and skill level.
And it is, again, important that we have people out there to do this, not just to do it, but to do it without hoping to make a buck off of it. Because as you said before, you're not going to knock down the private attorneys. I don't care. I will. Hey, there are a lot of people out there who are predatory attorneys. There are those who are, they're going to get you a little bit, but they're more interested in getting themselves a chunk of whatever you're doing. Whereas when someone's working working pro bono. Of course, that is a term that I think most people have heard, even if they don't understand exactly right. what it means. That means doing it for free, essentially. They are doing it out of the goodness of their heart or because it's a cause they believe in or whatever the case may be. And 2,500 lawyers across the country in your organization. How do people get in touch with them? I mean, how do they find a lawyer that's involved with the Veterans Consortium? Is there an office that they go to or what?
So a lot of the information that I'm going to talk about today, you can find on our website at vetsprobono.org. That's for volunteers and for veterans. And also veterans and volunteers can also call our toll-free number, and that's 888-838-7727. But again, vetsprobono.org has all that information. So if a veteran, particularly if he needs some help or she needs some help, that they can come to us, and you can submit a form online. We also have a couple tools. If a veteran just doesn't want to be represented by an attorney at the court, which completely they can do that if they want to, we do help you. When you're at the court, you have to file a brief. If you are doing it on your own, you still have to file a brief.
Don't do it on your own. I'm not a lawyer, but I know that that just doesn't work
if
out
if you
well.
want to and you feel comfortable. But we have created a tool within the last year that you can go on our website and you can create your own brief that then gets sent to us, and we can have an attorney look it over for you before you submit it to court.
Right.
So it's the online brief builder tool, and that's for veterans, and they can absolutely do that if they'd rather not be represented.
I think if I defended myself or represented myself, I would throw on the thick Southern accent. It would be like the Scopes Monkey trial. Your Honor, I don't believe that we have a constitutionally competent. And you know what the judge would say to me? He'd be like, what in the hell are you talking about? This has nothing to do with the Constitution. Hey, don't do it yourself. There are people out there willing to help you for free. It would seem like a no-brainer to take advantage of it. And so many programs to take advantage of. We're speaking with Samantha Stiltner. Samantha represents the Veterans Consortium, which is a pro bono team of lawyers, 2,500 strong around the country, working to help veterans with their legal issues when it comes to appeals and a variety of other issues as well. One that you just mentioned was upgrading discharges. So from an other than honorable to a general or an honorable. Tell us a little bit about that program and any of the success that you've been able to find with it so far.
So the program is relatively new. My colleague Danica Gonzalez is the attorney that leads that program, and we actually just got our first decision, and it was an upgrade.
Wow.
So we're 100% win rate right now. That's what
that's
I'm saying.
Pretty good.
But looking at this, and we've had so much science come along with post-traumatic stress and with traumatic brain injury in the last 10 years, we're starting to recognize that these other than honorable OTH discharges aren't willful conduct. Mm. This is not willful conduct. We recognize now, as the science is coming out, it actually changes your brain chemistry when you have some of these injuries. And a lot of science says we can't even call them injuries now because it's not something that might be able to be fixed.
Yeah.
So as an organization, we were looking at this and recognizing that we can't even help these folks at a court level because they can't get to court. So how do we stop this?
Right.
So we've started our discharge upgrade program. And again, you can find information about that on our website, vetsprobono.org, and you can apply. And we'll be happy to take a look at it. As I mentioned, Danica is a staff attorney. She's one of my colleagues, and she is feisty, and she is ready to work.
I think you've got to be in with that particular item because it is such a, it's a difficult one. There are some people who are letter of the law people, like, hey, you got another than honorable. There was a reason for that. They don't just hand those out for no reason. Of course, there can be mitigating and extenuating circumstances, and that would probably be what you guys are looking for, right?
Well, one of the interesting things in working in this industry is I have met, ex-JAGs and things along those lines who have said, there was a rule, you broke the rule, and now you're out. I had a meeting with one of the folks that I work on a legal clinic with, and he was a JAG for 10 years, and he's been out for about 10 years, and I was telling him about some of these people that I meet say, there was a rule, you broke the rule, you're out. And he said, about 10 years ago, I would have said the exact same thing. Coming out of the military, I would have said, those are the rules. And he said, now that I've had time to work with veterans, look into these things and be a little bit more educated, he said, I absolutely don't believe that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot. And so I understand that somebody believes their rules are rules and you have to abide by those rules. If you don't, then you have to take those consequences. At our organization, we recognize that, changing brain chemistry and you know, having something affect you to the point where it's not willful conduct anymore, or you're not getting the help that you need, there's something to be said for that.
Right.
And we're absolutely there to help because we believe in that.
There are specific cases, essentially, that may be, you may look at it and say, okay, maybe another than honorable was not actually correct with the new information that we have. I think there are some people that get concerned and think, well, they're trying to upgrade every other than honorable, and there's no other than honorables that are other than that's not the case. It's that there are specific cases where there may be those mitigating circumstances that you may have more information on, a better understanding of later on.
Absolutely.
And it's important to look at that. And if the information has changed, the only way to change the decision itself is through the legal system, and that's where the Veterans Consortium comes in. And we are speaking to Samantha Stiltner from the Veterans Consortium and talking about the various programs that they offer. So what about for somebody like me, someone who got a honorable discharge,
don't need an upgrade,
nothing there. What are some of the other programs that are available to the other veterans out there, those who, you know, don't necessarily need a discharge upgrade, but they do need some help with maybe something else?
So along with being a staff attorney, I am actually the program manager for our National Veterans and Appellate Law Clinic. And we do several different things through that. As I mentioned, I got involved with veterans law really early on in my career. And so part of our mission is to get more advocates. And so when we started looking at it, we said, where do we get these advocates from? And I said, let's get them right from the beginning. So we work with a lot of law schools. We work with a little over 30 nationally. And we work with all 4 out of the 5 of the law schools in D.C., and so what we do is I go out there and I teach veterans law to some of these projects. We have internships and externships. We have remote projects for students that are working during the day and they're going to law school at night. Mm. And we have programs and almost everything we do, we invite law students out with us because it's very important to help law students understand the importance of getting out in the community, outreach initiatives, and getting them started, hopefully with veterans law, really, really quickly in their career. And part of, you know, when I go out and I teach students is part of what I say is you don't have to do pro bono for a career. And I understand that a lot of you won't, but there's always time to do it on the side. Thus, the 2,500 volunteer attorneys that we have across the country. And so getting involved with law schools is another thing that we do. We have a program called Clinic in a Foot Locker. And so as these veterans law clinics get started at some of the area law schools, we actually give them a foot locker, and it's filled with text. It's filled with best practices. It's filled with all kinds of materials that's going to help the professor, first of all, get started. And that's working with us, too, to understand the law, taking our training, things like that. But it's also got things for students. This is the best way to do your interviewing and understanding that not everybody is going to be the same. And you're going to speak to somebody maybe from a Vietnam era differently than you're going to speak to somebody from, you know, Iraq era.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of the best practices things because we want to make sure that we're supporting these legal clinics as they get started. Along with that, we also do outreach initiatives. We started the first veterans legal clinic in Washington, D.C.
Right.
After working with the VA for quite some time and making it known that there are these legal clinics all over the country, but we don't have one in our own backyard. This is the nation's capital.
Yeah.
So working with them, we have an office now that we are there every single Friday from 10 to 4 p.m. And it's catered towards low-income veterans. And veterans can come in and they can just talk about anything. So if they come in, they might think they have one kind of issue, but we have attorneys that are there interviewing them saying, you know, you think you have this issue, but you might have a more pressing issue. So what we do is we interview veterans, we figure out what's going on, and then we work to facilitate a referral that gets them to an attorney that will be able to help them with their issues.
Right.
And like I said, any veterans that are listening, it is catered towards low-income veterans, but anybody can come in. We're not going to turn you away.
I think another issue is some of our older veterans. You just mentioned Vietnam. Mm-hmm. A lot of the veterans from those previous eras that maybe, you know, not the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans of recent years, think that all these programs are for the younger vets and are set up for them. Do you guys have programs that can help those veterans who served in Vietnam, Korea, the first Gulf War?
Any program that we have, any veteran can come in. So if you're a Vietnam veteran and you're still working on your board of veterans appeals claim, you can come in. If you have a discharge upgrade issue, come on in. If we do, when we have our legal clinics, come on in.
Right.
So for instance, last week was National Pro Bono Week, and we got involved and we had our second annual legal muster. And the legal muster is, we do three simultaneous clinics around Washington, D.C. We were in Northeast, Northwest, and Southeast.
Wow.
And we had about 15 attorneys and about 12 law students. And we just worked all day with veterans. And, you know, we invite everybody to come in. Let's see what we can do. And we actually had a couple active duty service members that came in, too, because that's what we're there for. We're there to get out into the community. We want to help. We want to see what's going on. And we want to try to fix it with you.
Yeah. And that is an important thing and really good work that is being done by the Veterans Consortium. And of course, this is pro bono legal work. As we've mentioned, there are fantastic private practicing attorneys out there doing great things for veterans. There are also those predators out there who see a veteran as like, oh, I can get this guy a bunch of money and I can take a certain percentage of it. When people are out there, you being a lawyer yourself, you knowing some of the things that veterans go through, when it comes to looking for attorney, looking for an attorney for a veteran to represent them, and they want to go, for whatever reason, to someone who's in a private practice, what are some of the things for them to watch out for, or some of the things to ask for and look for from an attorney that they either want or don't want their attorney to be doing and having?
My number one thing, the piece of advice I give, is watch out for promises. Attorneys should not be making you promises about what they can get you, and there should be no absolutes that are coming out of their mouth. No one knows what's going to happen, particularly at the Court of Veterans Appeals. We have 8 judges, and you don't know which judge you're getting assigned to until after you've filed everything.
Right.
It's the last part of the process. So any attorney in any kind of circumstance that's making you promises, I would be very wary of that. Also, if you go, a lot of people don't know that if you go to a court's website, you can typically see a list of practitioners for our court, Court of Veterans Appeals. If you go, you can see a list of practitioners. So when you're looking at it, possibly going with an attorney, I would go and check, do a background check and make sure that they actually are barred and available to represent at that court.
Right.
Another thing I would look at is testimonials. One of the best ways to find a lawyer, I've found, is talk to someone else. You know, has someone else had a really good experience with a lawyer? Has someone else had a really bad experience with a lawyer? Word of mouth is very important in any kind of service industry. And as much as attorneys like to believe that we're not that, we are 100% a service organization. You know, This is what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So, watch out for promises. Go and do your homework on the attorney. Make sure that they're barred wherever they say they're going to be practicing. And talk to other folks. You know, it's just like finding any kind of other person, you know.
Right. If you have a lawyer buddy, I have some friends who are lawyers, some of whom are veterans and aren't. I know. They're each and every one of them. It's just the worst. I don't know why I'm still friends with any of them, but if you have a lawyer friend who doesn't work within the veteran sphere of law, is that someone that you could still go to for advice, or should you look for someone who has specific expertise within that area, like at, for example, the Veterans Consortium?
I would say, I'll say what I do. I wouldn't ask one of my housing attorney friends about employment law, because that's not a specialty. And a lot of these folks have been doing it.
Right.
And when someone comes to me and asks a question that's outside of the realm in which I practice, I don't answer it for that reason, because we've been trained to do this. We keep up on the legal education. Any attorney is supposed to be keeping up on the legal education. We do conferences, we do training, we read all the new court cases. And it's really important to go to someone that's been trained.
Yeah.
And so when you're coming to us with our attorneys have got to go through 8 hours of legal education before they can even get started.
Right.
And that's part of it. They also have a mentor, and they go to that mentor if they're a first time case. If it's the first case they've taken, they have to go to the mentor before they file anything. And our mentors have done over 400 or 500 cases.
Right.
So our mentors know what we're looking for and know the way, you know, what we're looking for and the way to get the best representation. Right now, we have about a 90% success rate in the cases that we've taken, and there's a reason.
Yeah, it's because you guys know what you're doing.
Yes, and because we're staying on top of the legal education and making sure that our volunteers are getting the best training so that we can give veterans the best service free of cost.
and passing along that expertise from each other, basically getting it from the mentors to the junior people. And I think that there is this fallacy out there that people think a lawyer is a lawyer is a lawyer. No, there are lawyers who deal specifically with tax code, and you wouldn't want them representing you in a criminal trial. There are ones who only do criminal trials. You wouldn't want them representing you in a tax trial.
Yeah, the days of a multi-practitioner, solo practitioner who does a lot of general things, those days are basically over at this point, unless you're in a very small town with maybe an older practitioner. But lawyers today, especially in this area, they're going to be specialized. And I think that's one of the things you're going to want to look for. Because if I'm going to somebody and I need a case done, I want to know that they've done that case or that type of case a lot over and over again. And that it's so important that they're keeping up with training and keeping up with what's happening in the legal sphere, as opposed to someone who's like, I've had 20 cases. They were 20 different kinds of cases. Right.
Well, the Veterans Consortium is doing amazing work for veterans out there and doing it for free. Looking to get your discharge upgrade? Maybe you got one of those other than honorables, a bad paper? They're working on that. Working for an appeal of some sort at the VA and your disability rating or something like that? Well, guess what? They do that too. And they're doing it all for free. We've been talking with, I just lost my place. We've been talking with Samantha Steltner from the Veterans Consortium here on The Morning Briefing. And as we finish up here, Samantha, where can people go to find out more about the Veterans Consortium and the programs you offer?
Veterans and volunteers or folks that want to be volunteers can go to the Veterans Consortium at vetsprobono.org. You can email us at outreach@vetsprobono.org, or you can give us a call at 888-838-7727.
Well, thank you to Samantha for joining us. Also, Justin Brown of Hill Vets, Jake Hughes, and don't forget, coming up tomorrow, MMA superstar Shane Crutchton is our special guest host. Have a great day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.